Good evening and welcome to the HIV Hour on 97.2 FM in the Brighton Hove area and on DAB Plus Radio.
Hey.
Yes, I'm joined in
Hello,
the studio.
We're here.
I'm not on my own.
No, we're here.
Oh, good.
Joined by the lovely Sue. Hello, Sue. And
Hi,
the lovely Josh. And we've also got Gary Pargeter. Hello, Gary.
Hello, Gary. Hey.
Come to you in a moment with an interview, which we'll find all about you all.
Yes, how are you two anyway? Yes. Before we get on to Gary.
Yes.
How's
I'm good. I'm enjoying the signs of spring and there's a bit of gardening, the bulbs come up and then he's bringing in lots of rodents and
Oh lovely.
Yeah. Well, it's actually been lizard week this week, it's been so warm.
Oh, is that a new thing, lizard week?
Normally don't bring in lizards until about July, but I think it's the same lizard.
It keeps coming back.
Anyway,
have you tagged it? Have you tagged this
no,
lizard?
No, it's the same market, so same trail missing. So, what have you been up to, Josh?
Same thing, really. Just pottering around, doing things, setting up for the show, doing things, pottering around. I mean, that's as basic as vague as possible. Releasing a track in, but not until July. So I'll just put the feelers out at the moment. Yeah. But yeah, it's really exciting actually because I've never ever done it before. So I've collaborating with a good friend of mine, Azaro, and a guy called Ed Johns, who's the sound engineer. We're creating this song it's quite scary, but we've already got our first gig at the Bear Weekend.
Oh, yeah. Oh, great.
Wow.
Which month is that?
It's July.
Yeah.
Gary's looking. Yes, I'm just looking at Gary. It's July. It's the second week in July. Weekend in July, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. We'll go out Graham on anyway, the chair bear at some point. So, so that's exciting. How about you, Sue?
Yeah, no, I'm fine. Busy as ever, you know, with one thing and another. I'm busy. Sort of, I know you're going to faint when I say I'm planning my retirement. Not that I'm going anywhere, but I know I reach retirement age year. And I know, so I'm going to be cutting me hours from January. So still doing what I'm doing, obviously on the radio as well, doing the work with THT because I can't ever stop that. But, you know, and I think we were talking before we went on, and I think whether you're living with HIV or not, it's planning for that future.
And
I feel quite secure living with HIV, planning for my future, knowing that I'm still going to be here in many more years to come. And it's great that we can have that inspiration and from others that you can plan.
I
was diagnosed in 93, but I didn't. I was advised really not to plan for a future.
No, don't bother.
Exactly.
See,
things have changed and priorities are different, but
exciting. It's very exciting, isn't it?
Watch this space.
Yeah, work to live, not live to work. Yeah. I said that earlier.
I know.
Anyway. Shall we have a song?
Oh yes, why not?
So this is a song, and it's been chosen by Gary. A lovely song. Welcome back to the HIV Hour on 97.2 FM in the Brighton Hove area and on DAB Plus Radio. You can email us, and we'd love hearing from you at info@hivhour.org.uk. And our website is hivhour.org.uk. We're proud to be sponsored by Jack Russell Technologies. And I think that's all we've got to say for all the ideas at the moment. So, please do get in touch. We'd love hearing your suggestions on who to have as guest and what topic we should cover. So I'd like to introduce Gary Pargeter, who is the director of Lunch Positive. And...
That's
your title?
There's my title. Hello there.
Yeah. And Sue and I were Gary.
Gary. I mean, first of all, I know we're going to talk about all your amazing accolades and all the amazing work you do in the HIV sector. But I want to know all the underneath, the inspiration, what, I mean, because you've done some amazing things and you're continuing to do that. And we want to know, I think we all want to know, and our listeners want to know what has driven you. But before we go any further, tell us a bit about that song, that gorgeous song you chose for your first one.
Thanks, Sue. So so that song kind of epitomises really much of my kind of emotional journey with HIV.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's a song about kind of loss, but also finding love and finding companionship and making something strengthening and from having experienced difficult situations, really. Mm-hmm. So it's about both sides now, you know, what we go through and what we take from those and how we go on and how we hopefully thrive and flourish. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's all based on people. It's all about the loss and the regaining and the friendship of people.
Mm-hmm. So let's start. Let's start at the beginning, if we can, if we're allowed to.
Beginning exactly where would you
like to? I don't know. Whatever your beginning is, because everyone has got a different sort of sense of the beginning from when things started.
Okay. So, I mean, I suppose the first thing to say then is that, you know, we're here in Brighton and Hove at the moment recording this, and I grew up here. And in fact, I grew up most of my childhood literally 30 seconds away from this studio. Brilliant. Yeah. So for me, it's very much about, you know, being a gay man. I knew I was gay very young. And, you know, HIV, in terms of how that's been part of my life, really was part of my life from the get-go, you know, from being a teenager, you know, exploring being gay, being on the scene, knowing other gay people at quite a young age, you know, young teenager. HIV has always been there for me in some way or another in terms of, you know, understanding it, at that time being fearful of it back in the 1980s.
Yeah, yeah.
And thereafter, you know, an intrinsic part of my kind of young adulthood and as I've kind of grown older and
as you were growing up, Gary, did you know much about the virus? I mean, I know, you know, many, many years ago we had all this, I call it misinformation on our television screens back in the 80s. I mean, do you remember?
Yeah, so I was 14 in 1981.
Right.
So,
okay.
And of course, that's when, you know, the news has started to kind of seep through, you know, and much of it, of course, was misinformation, but you know, the news that we understood it at the time. And, you know, just like my straight peers, you know, I was kind of out and about and, you know, and I knew other gay people, many of those kind of older gay people than me, because I was still very young. And, you know, we were talking then about, you know, the fear around what we knew to be around HIV at the time. And, and I have to say, you know, I think many of those older gay men that I knew at the time who were kind of mentors to me as a young person coming out, you know, were personally very affected by it, many of them, because many of them died, you know, within years of me meeting them. But actually, they were great mentors and great role models, and you know, their kind of strength and resilience through such difficult times, and something that's kind of inspired and driven me on, really. But yeah, so I mean, it was part of my psyche from the get go, as an adult, a young adult, really. And also Brighton and Hove being a town.
Yes,
but now
like
a city,
of course, yes.
Yeah. but it's somewhere that, you know, where the gay community has always been, has always flourished and felt very comfortable, and being privileged to grow up here as a gay man, you know, meant that, you know, I just knew lots of people for whom HIV was, you know, a consideration, an issue, a concern and a fear, you know. And it's kind of, it has always been that way, really.
Where did you get most of your information? Just through peer networks, through mentors, like older men? I suppose it was first recognised in America, wasn't it? And then how did you notice the creep?
I mean, for me at the time, I mean, I was still very young, so really they were just conversations that I was having with other people who I knew to be gay, you know, and kind of befriended me and, you know, were kind of helping me find my way on the gay scene, really. And it was only a few years later when, you know, when I got a bit older, really, when we started to see the information coming through from the local voluntary sector organisations. Yeah. I mean, all of those which have gone now, you know, the very, very early days in the late 80s and early 90s. That's when the kind of more detailed information came through, but like many, you know, it was growing up with fear at that time, and lack of knowledge and certainty, and also, of course, you know, no treatment, so effective treatment. So, you know, that was something that I'm pleased to have come through and to have survived, and obviously very saddened that so many people that I knew at the time didn't, or are still very affected, those that were diagnosed at that time, but that fortunately have lived.
Of course.
Yeah.
Back when you were diagnosed, Gary, and just sort of reflecting on all the amazing stuff you do now and all the support you offer to the peers and what have you, what is that in comparison of what you felt or what you got when you were maybe newly diagnosed and coming to terms and all those sorts of things.
Well, I mean, I have to say, I feel as like I walk in the shoes and the strides of people much greater than I, you know. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that absolutely I experienced when I was diagnosed in the early 90s, my early 20s, was kinship, companionship, friendship, people reaching out and wanting with kindness and mm-hmm. wanting to comfort, you know, people who also were living with HIV or AIDS, as it was being talked about at the time.
Uh-huh.
And how all enveloping and embracing that peer support was, you know, both mm-hmm. emotionally and practically. Because, you know, I mean, practically everybody I knew at that time, by that time, had been diagnosed as living with mm-hmm. HIV, my whole social circle, you know. Mm-hmm. And most of those people, most of their extended social circles were people living with HIV. So it really was, you know, a vast community that was affected. And many of those, not without some real challenges and difficulties, those people that were living, and mm-hmm. many of those facing death, yet still, you know, that kindness and that willingness to, mm-hmm. you know, to support one another was so, so central and intrinsic to people's lives. Mm-hmm. And I benefited from that personally. Yeah. You know, I mm-hmm. was comforted and I was looked after through mm-hmm. the efforts of those other people living with HIV. So, and I hope to bring that to all that I do now. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. Often people living in different circumstances, but still that kindness and that wanting to kind of comfort and to be there for people is kind of really the core of it, really.
So, what I'd like to know. When did you realise that you wanted, had it been a change of career or were you working in health? Tell us.
Oh, I'm liking your probing questions. No, it's great. It stops me wittering on. So thank you for that. I can tell you my experience was is that I had a career. I had quite a rapid career, actually. I was working in catering. I was managing 16 cafe restaurants. I was traveling around. I was a young man. I was out there. You know, it was great. And actually, at the point of my diagnosis, my partner, mm-hmm. who was also called Gary, had mm-hmm. Very very rapidly developed what we then knew to be HIV related dementia.
Right.
Which was absolutely you couldn't doubt that that's what it was, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So at that point, and that was very fast acting as well. Mm-hmm. So actually, I had to needed to tell my employers really because I wasn't able to work and to continue to be there for him.
Yeah.
Because he needed, you know, 24-hour, 7-day-a-week looking after. And at the point of telling my employers, they offered me retirement at the age of 25.
Really?
So, now I won't judge too much on that now. It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
You know, there could be lots of reasons for that, but in actual fact, I was actually quite pleased to take it because mm-hmm. it meant that I could look after Gary.
Right.
And which I did, and sadly, he died 6 months later.
He did.
But that was at the point that my career changed.
Right.
And it was at that point that I suddenly realised, well, you know, here I am living with HIV, having had these experiences, what do I want to do with that, really? Mm. So thereafter, a few years of getting over that loss, really, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and dipping my toes into volunteering locally.
Yeah.
And then I became very involved in a local organisation called Open Door.
Yes, I really recall it.
Thank you. Yeah, which had been around since the mid-80s.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a house that had been opened up by a retired Anglican priest who was living with HIV, opened up his home to people as a place of kind of comfort and refuge. I went there as a service user and then I started volunteering there.
Right. So this whole career started off as a volunteer.
Absolutely. Yeah. All about giving your time and your energy mm-hmm. and your compassion. Uh-huh. For others, but also taking a lot from it as well, because that's what volunteering does.
Absolutely,
you know, that being part of something and share and being able to share, you know, it's mutually mm-hmm. just so wonderful for people.
Mm-hmm. So lunch positive, Gary. You know, I'm going to talk about that. So how did it come about?
Thank you. So well, that came about because Open Door, which had been around for 15 or so years,
mm-hmm.
Longer than that, was due to close. It was due to close for a range of reasons, not least lack of funding. So it wasn't going to provide a space for people to gather and be together to have peer support and also to share a lunch. So myself and a group of volunteers from Open Door, and I have to acknowledge those great people that I was mm-hmm. working with, decided that we continue to do something that brought people together around a shared meal mm-hmm. for conversation and peer support. Mm-hmm. So Open Door closed in late 2008. And we decided to open a weekly HIV lunch club, mm-hmm. which we finally got going in the early part of 2009. And that's how Lunch Positive started. We created a space for people to come along once a week, share a meal, find friendship mm-hmm. and peer support.
No funding?
There was a very small amount of funding. I mean, it was a smaller piece of work
sure,
then as well.
Of course.
But the funding kind of grew over time, really.
Yeah.
And we were an entirely voluntary organisation for the first 6 years from that time. It's kind of grown from there, really.
And today, I mean, you've won accolades, you've won awards. Not you, but the whole thing of Lunch Positive. And you're doing now than more than just a lunch on a Friday.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. absolutely. We do. But at its core, it's all about bringing people together. Yeah. So the food is incredibly important to people for lots of reasons, whether people aren't eating well or if it's something that just enables a conversation of people to meet others, you know. But at its core, it's all about bringing people together. And people often say, actually, it's so much more than lunch.
Yes.
I mean, hopefully the lunch is brilliant and wonderful.
Yeah, I've tasted it. It's gorgeous.
We've got brilliant volunteers that do put that together. So I think they do fantastic food. But it's as much about creating the space for people to be in and feel secure in and connected with others within as well.
Yeah.
So we do Brighton. We do 2 days in Brighton now. We do it once a month in Eastbourne. We're just starting to do it once a month in Hastings. Mm-hmm. Once a month in Seaford for people that live in the Lewis area, which is an area local to Brighton. Mm-hmm. And we're just looking for some premises to start doing it once a month in Crawley and an occasional drop-in in Worthing as well.
Yeah. My hometown.
You'll get an invite.
Yeah, absolutely. Any help, just knock on the door. whatever door. Can I ask you something about... We talk about stigma, don't we? We do, as people ourselves in the room, living with HIV, and I think most of us have at some point endured some form of stigma. How do you see this going forward? I mean, this is the biggest thing at the moment. We know, you can live well, you take the medication and, but that's not just simple as for everyone, is it? What do you foresee for the future on how we can literally break down this flipping stigma, Gary?
Well, I think the first point is absolutely, thank you, it's absolutely, it's still acknowledging that it still absolutely does exist, sometimes in other ways and forms, and sometimes in very subtle forms as well as the kind of overt ones. Mm. So there's still an absolute need for public education.
Yeah.
And I think it's made additionally difficult because, many people think it does no longer exist. So you're having to actually prove the point before you can then actually work on educating around it. So I think we're, for those of us that have the wherewithal, I think being able to continue educating and highlighting the fact that it does exist and it still affects people, can affect people so very, very, very badly is really important to make sure that people understand that can be the impact of HIV-related stigma. Mm. And that's across all communities.
Yeah.
I have to say, I hope it won't be too unpopular, but I think there's also a real case for us working for whichever communities we personally are within, and so I consider myself to be within the LGBTQ communities.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have to acknowledge that it still exists there.
Yes.
And it still exists in spaces and in circumstances where people might already feel vulnerable, for example, when they're meeting new people, or they're lonely and they're isolated in bars or hookups and those kind of things. Forming friendships and relationships, it still exists there, and we can't assume that it doesn't just because we are from within those communities, which are very often most greatly affected.
It does.
So, and that's a responsibility of us all for one another, and to continue the funding for it, which we know is on the wane, and those organisations that are working in many, many ways to combat stigma and also to counter the effects of stigma for the people that they work with.
Yeah.
Not giving up on the funding or the support for those organisations, and there are many of them, to continue their work is really important because that then enables people to overcome their experiences of HIV stigma, to become more robust and resilient, and also to hopefully kind of counter it in the communities that they're part of. So it's it's still very much a key priority, and I think it will be for, you know, for a very long time.
I'm not going to say, oh, you know, in a couple of years we're going to get rid of it. No, it's a continuous onward, and I'll say challenging. I'll say struggle, because there's still so much and still so much of internal stigma we have to tackle, isn't it? You know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I also think, you know, improving the life circumstances of people living with HIV, you know, has can have an absolute direct effect on how we cope generally, and therefore how we cope with those experiences of stigma. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and also, you know, let's face it, for some people, it's beyond education. For some people, you know, HIV stigma is encapsulated with a whole load of other dislikes, and I go far as saying sometimes hatred.
Yes.
And calling out people that use HIV, you know, as a weapon, to harm and to hurt other people, you know, which can also happen. We just have to acknowledge that it does happen for some people.
Mm-hmm. Gary, what I want to ask you before, because we're coming, we're sort of drifting to the end. What I'd like to ask you, what does Gary do in his spare time? Come on, we all have to have these releases and release, whatever you call them. Yeah, what do you like doing when you're not doing all this amazing work?
Okay, what do I enjoy doing? Well, I sleep quite a lot when I'm not doing.
That's good one.
I rest more than people probably realise. So thanks for everybody that says I must rest more. I do actually get some rest. Things have changed and they change a bit as we get older. So it's a really boring answer, I'm afraid, Sue. But but I very much enjoy walking my dog.
That's brilliant.
And,
lovely.
And just being kind of at one with nature, really. So out and about in the green or the fresh air, you know, by the river or by the sea, walking my dog is heaven to me. And that's one of the things I do in most of my spare time, and it's really enjoyable.
Yeah.
Gary, what would you say if someone's listening and they have tuned in, maybe for the first time, they're a new HIV Hour listener. They've been recently diagnosed with HIV. What would you say to that person?
I would say, depending on how you're feeling, HIV doesn't need to be the end of everything for you. There's a great community of people out there that are there to support and help. HIV in itself, we know the facts mean that we can live well and we can live happily and healthily and long with HIV. So please hold on to that if you don't already. And if you feel the need to reach out for others living with HIV and those organisations that involve them, because there's so much support out there.
Yeah.
You won't be alone. And it needn't feel possibly as difficult as it feels for you right now.
Things will get better.
Absolutely. Probably, yeah. Absolutely.
We're very lucky to live in this.
Yeah.
Would you like to introduce your second song?
It's Make Your Own Kind of Music by Mama Cass.
Brilliant.
And why have you chosen this one? This is another one of my favourites.
Thank you. Well, it's a lovely bit of bubblegum pop, which kind of I find uplifting every time I hear it. But its content is about, you know, be who you are, be yourself, celebrate that, worry not too much about other people if you can, and just enjoy your life.
That's the HIV Hour on 97.2 FM, DAB Plus, and of course, RadioReverb.com. That was amazing. That was, it's not Mama Cass now, is it? It's Cass Elliott, isn't it?
Yeah.
That was an amazing. I was just listening on the outside to that scene. That was so good with Gary. That was just a nice personal journey.
Bit of heartfelt. More of an insight.
Very heartfelt, and and it's so good to share that with everyone, really.
It's nice, interesting to hear where the activism came from. It was activism, so. It's, you know, obviously from receiving care and support from the community.
Yeah, and he's giving that back now.
So often the volunteer's journey, isn't it?
Yeah.
And one thing about this country and this city is that we do.
Yeah, we do. And, you know, I volunteer. We all have volunteered. And it's, and people... Mm-hmm. people.
Well, with this show, we're in total.
Well, we're volunteering.
I started off as a volunteer. Many years ago, the beginning of my diagnosis.
And you're retiring.
Watch it. I'll be back to haunt you.
Most of the shows on this station are
voluntary. Yeah, it's all voluntary. It's all voluntary. Yeah, absolutely.
Ooh, yeah.
Oh, yes. Should we just say that? Yes. So the Reverbathon 2025 is going to be next weekend.
13th of April.
Yes. So please donate. If you go to radioreverb.com and go to the donate button. And it's going to be 2 days of live shows, so next Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, so we should be broadcasting live from the studio.
Whoa. At
11 o'clock. 11 o'clock on the Sunday. We did it last year, so we're going to do our live show. And there's going to be lots of other shows, favourite shows on there. So do check us out.
Great way to get to know the station, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. And it's to keep us on air because you know, we're a non-profit organisation.
Yeah.
And we need donations to keep us going. And,
exactly.
You know, we're 18 years old this year.
I know.
Yes. Happy birthday, Radio Reverb.
Yeah.
And that's a big thank you to everybody out there. But why we're still here 18 years later, because of the support from the community, from the people out there that believe in us, that know that we need to be here and all the other radio stations within the radio reverb.
And just before we go to, because we've got a great recording for Mike, we'll say that in a minute. It's 10 years for the HRVR as well.
I know.
Yeah, wow.
So
we have jelly and...
You can have whatever
jelly
you
and
like.
Cream and blancmange.
Yeah, we'll play pasta parcel and
streams.
So I did a great. Sorry, David. Yeah. I did a great because since the government's the Labour government's things on benefits changes is going to be changing. I went down to see Mike Brimacombe, who's the welfare rights coordinator of the Terence Higgins Trust in Brighton, and I just had a quick interview with him about what's going to look like, and just got some kind words from him, really. So,
should we play that?
Welcome back to the HIV Hour, 97.2 FM, DAB Plus, and RadioReverb.com. So, I'm with Mike Brimacombe, who is the welfare rights coordinator for Terence Higgins Trust. I've got that right over, Michael.
Yeah.
And so hiya. How are you doing?
I'm good.
So, the changes that's just happened in the with the government regarding PIP, I mean, I was thinking people might get a bit concerned about this that's going to come up. Could you just go through what's going to happen?
I can talk you through the proposals of the Green Paper that's just come out from the Labour government. Obviously, there's going to be people a lot worried because they've heard different bits and pieces. So the official line is at the moment, and obviously we've got to remember it's a Green Paper. It's still got to go through the Commons and then the Lords. And I do know there are a number of disability charities that are up in arms about these changes, and they will be contesting the government about it. But how far they can get with it remains to be seen. But as far as the PIP is concerned, the main changes for people claiming that benefit is regarding the daily living activities.
Yeah.
Currently, for instance, if you were applied for PIP, you could be awarded 2 points on every question of those 10 questions of daily living, scoring 20 points, and you would get the enhanced rate benefit. As from November 2026, that is going to change. The proposal is that a person would need to score at least 4 points on one of the daily living activities to qualify for either the enhanced or the standard rate of component of PIP. So in other words, if you scored 2 points on every 10 questions to get those 20 points from November 2026, you would not qualify for the daily living component. It's essential you score 4 points on one of the activities. That is going to make it harder for a lot of our clients that we see, but for some where I know they've got further disabilities and their illnesses are more severe, it won't be a problem. But it is causing an issue, I know, I've been speaking to some groups currently of what that will entail. The mobility questions, the criteria for them are staying exactly the same, so there's no change. Things that were put around by the Tory government was to do away with monetary benefit and to put the over to vouchers. That is not happening. It's going to increase in line with inflation every year up to 2030. So that's the PIP change.
Yeah.
They are in the consultation with disability groups and people with lived experience of disability, looking at the consultation of re-looking at the actual benefit form to see if it's right for purpose going forward. So that's obviously going out for consultation and still being discussed. So it remains to be seen what changes will happen there. With Universal Credit, there are some changes here which will affect an awful lot of people. At the moment, as from the 7th of April, with the increase for this year, the standard allowance for a person over 25 is £400.14. Under the proposals they put forward, they are planning to raise that amount in 2029 and 2030 with an annual increase to £775. That's going to be inflation breaking to get to that figure by 2029 and
30. Yeah.
There's a give and a take away with Universal Credit. Obviously, with Universal Credit, there's the what they call the health related elements of Universal Credit, which is the limited capability for work and the limited capability for work and work related activity. Now, they're the components of ESA, Employment Support Allowance, of the work related activity and the support group. Under Universal Credit, the health related element, which is now the new name.
That's what it's called now.
Under these proposals. In 2026, they are freezing the amount of what is currently the limited capability for work and work-related activity element, which as from the 7th of April is £423.27. That is going to be frozen. For any new claimants of Universal Credit, if you apply for the health-related elements, two things. To be eligible for that health element, you have to be in receipt of PIP. And the amount of the limited capability to work-related activity, health-related element, as it's going to be called, you're only going to be entitled to 50% of that amount. So looking at this year's figure, that means for any new claimant, you're only going to get £211.64. A month, and that is frozen. That will not increase up until 2029-30 as it stands. That will affect a lot of people claiming for the first time, and also for claimants that are currently on that benefit, it's going to mean a decrease in benefits on a yearly basis because that element is not increasing. And then obviously come 2028, they are abolishing the work capability assessment, which goes along with the Universal Credit 50, UC 50 work capability form. So in other words, you won't carry out that, are you eligible to work with your illness or disability? That assessment is going, but it's going to be linked to the personal independent assessment.
Right.
So, again, you have to be receiving PIP to get the health-related element of Universal Credit. And obviously, they're making the daily living component of PIP more difficult to get as from November 2026. So it is a serious knock-on effect for sick and disabled people, especially those who've been living long-term the inability to be able to work.
Have you noticed people are concerned about it, or a lot of questions?
Yeah, there have been. I this morning I was just speaking to the day service group at the Sussex Beacon, and they were a very involved group. They had a lot of questions, and I can understand it because there's myths going around, and you can read different. I've done myself. You can see different bits online on the social media, and some things are right, some things are wrong. The information I'm giving to you today is directly from the Labour's Green Paper on this. So it's the latest instalment of what's going on. Obviously, all these changes is to save money.
Yeah,
we know that. And it's also to try and help long-term sick and disabled people into work. So the job centres are having to change the way that they operate and way they help people into work. And we've also got a lot of claimants out there currently still in receipt of Employment Support Allowance, income related, who will be migrated over to Universal Credit under the transitional protection rules, which means that you move over to Universal Credit and you get the same amount of money as you currently get under Employment Support Allowance. I would say to those, they have no reason to worry. The actual online form to do Universal Credit is quite straightforward. You can start it, take a rest, go back and complete it. And then once it's submitted, everything should be fine. But we are finding some anomalies. And I would say to anybody going through that process, we here at THT and the Welfare Rights Department would be willing to help you do that transition. But if you're doing it yourself, I would always tell someone to make sure they check on their first payment page what they're getting. We are finding some people have moved over and the transitional protection amount has not been included in the payment. Yeah, and obviously I would also make sure you check your payment page that you're getting what you think you should be entitled to. Obviously, transitional protection will vary from claimant to claimant. It depends on your personal circumstances and what you were receiving under employment support allowance.
Yeah.
But again, if anyone's got any questions.
Yeah, so I was going to say, if anyone's just call the THT office.
Yeah, they can call the THT office. They can either call the office direct. I can give you my direct number if you like.
Yeah, if that's okay.
So my landline on my desk is 01273 764 203, or my works mobile is 07380 651386.
Well done. Those numbers. It's hard to remember them all, isn't it?
Numbers are in my head.
Thank you, Mike. You know, you do such a great job and, you know, appreciate it. And it's just...
You're welcome. Like I said, I mean, it is a worrying time for people. So if you've got any questions or you want to check what you're entitled or anything, probably just, like I said, give us a call.
Yeah. And you're looking for, because you're very busy, aren't you? So are you looking for volunteers?
Yeah, I am looking for a new volunteer at the moment. So is anyone would be interested in working with figures and filling out forms for a day? Yeah, get in touch with me.
Okay, fabulous. Thank you so much, mate.
You're welcome.
Hi, if you've just tuned back in, this is the HIV Hour on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM in the Brighton and Hove area, .com online. That was an amazing interview.
Yeah, it's so important to get that information out, isn't it? I know it's in the news a lot at the moment, but I mean, a lot of people must be worried and scared, sort of concerned about it and want to know what to do. But I know Mike does a great job down on his team.
He does.
It's a fluid situation, isn't it? Things changing all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a lot of misinformation as well.
Yeah.
I think it's good to get that message out. And we can, you know, that we can share that on a few
I think
episodes coming up.
Absolutely. That'll be useful for later on as well, because it's going to go on for a while, all these changes and all these new things they're going to be
doing.
That's
good for Parliament, as well.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's a lot of other organisations, like the Citizens Advice Bureau. So
yes, there is.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So it's speaking to Welfare Rights Advice.
Yes.
Lots of support out there.
Yes, there is. As Gary mentioned in his interview, there's so much support out there.
There is.
So you've got something to announce.
Have I?
A tune.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You've got a tune to announce.
Do you know what? When you rung me before and said, Sue, we need a song. We need a song.
From you, Sue.
From me. And you won't believe this, but I love going to these 70s and 80s disco events. I know. I'm an old disco queen from the 70s and 80s. And I was busy planning a new event. And it's called Disco Inferno. And when you met, oh, Sue, do you have a song? Disco Inferno by the Tramps. Absolutely. I couldn't say no, could I? Fantastic.
Welcome back to the HIV Hour on 97.2 FM in the Brighton Hove area, of course. But we're on DAB Plus Radio if you're further afield. And don't forget, our podcast is available globally and we get downloads from all over the world. So thank you to all of those listeners who download us and listen to us.
Yeah, and anyone who a new listener.
Thank you for giving your time up to listen to us.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Suggestions. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I'm just looking at this because there's loads of news about what's happening in America with the new administration. So throughout the United States, there's a lot of health advocates and elected officials are voicing concerns over what President Donald Trump's proposed reorganization and potential elimination. Of the Centers for Disease Control, what's going to happen with them with funding and stuff. So it's a very scary time, isn't it? Very. It seems like. What do you think about that?
Yeah.
So I'm aware of PEPFAR, which is the President's Emergency Fund for AIDS Relief, is that right?
I believe
so. That's set up by George W. Bush, actually.
Yes, that's right,
Which surprised me when I found that out, but that's, provided funding for many charities, the majority of which are sort of the biggest benefit prisons and sub-Saharan Africa.
Yeah.
And I know there's been emails rushing around the globe since Trump announced some of his cuts about, you know, people might have to stop treatment mid-course. And, you know,
it's scary, that, isn't it?
Just run out.
Yeah, so what's going to happen there?
So I mean, there is advice floating around. I think I got one from iBase, an email the other day about what to do if your medication suddenly stops.
And what what's this?
I didn't actually read further.
It's out there.
There are safer ways to do it and try and salvage therapy when it comes back. Obviously, doing it the wrong way could be stopping treatment, could be catastrophic.
Exactly. You need that support as well, but if the support's been cut, then how do you get that help? It's a difficult one. But despite advances in biomedical prevention such as PrEP, 12% decline in new HIV cases between 2018 and 2022, about 31,800 people acquired HIV in 22.
Right.
So there's still people obviously
Is that in America?
Yeah.
So there's 1.2 million people living with HIV in the United States.
Right.
So there's a lot of people to consider that, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
The division award must funding via grants to state, local, and tribal health departments, national and community-based organisations, and education agencies. So I think they're all trying to get together, aren't they? They're all kind of scared and trying to see what to do and move forward with it.
Yeah.
I mean, we are lucky in this in the UK, really.
We are. Yeah.
Well, do you ever seen the film Dallas Buyers Club?
Oh, yes. Gosh, that's an old one. Yeah.
You know, but drugs were available, but they couldn't get them, and they had to go to Mexico and create a buyers club.
That's right. Yeah.
But that actually did happen in this country. There were drugs available that they couldn't get on the NHS, and they ended up getting them from either Mallorca or Canary Islands or somewhere. But there was obviously some kind of European loophole where people could actually get the drugs and pay for them themselves from some of the Spanish islands.
I mean, if these cuts are enacted, I mean, they're not enacted yet, are they? So it could impact $50 million in CDC funding for HIV efforts. In Georgia, for example, so that's just one state, isn't it? And that's got the highest rate of new HIV cases since 2022. South Florida, for example, proposed cuts would affect local clinics such as the Pride Center, which has been providing HIV testing and education since 2006. So across the board, there's going to be all these cuts.
People who are sort of marginalized anyway from communities.
Yeah, exactly.
Health inequalities and poverty and inequalities.
And that doesn't, and that's as well as I've seen another story about the funding that they give to Africa, and that's going to be cut down as well.
More so, to
third world countries. So that's another impact.
Yeah. Which are already struggling.
Yeah, exactly. That's what.
So with that, we do feel for them around the world.
Yeah. Send our love, don't we?
So if you are affected by any of this, please do let us know. We'd love to hear more about it and how it affects you directly, or if you know people that are affected. Please do let us know, because we're protected a little bit here, aren't we?
Yeah, I think we are. Yeah, I think we're quite lucky in this country.
Really. But you know, there are people who can't work because of episodic illness who are being affected by the benefit cuts, as Michael.
Michael's
welfare advisor has to help people.
But we have the NHS as well, so we forget about that, don't we? So.
We are blessed.
Yes, we are.
We've got a conference happening at the end of April this month. Yeah, which is April. Did you do anything for April Fools? I digress.
I don't even know what I did this morning.
the Beaver Conference, stands for the British HIV Association, are having their spring conference in Brighton. I don't think they've had a spring conference here before.
I don't recall one in Brighton.
You interviewed the chair of Beaver.
I did.
Professor Dr. Yvonne Felice.
I know. Amazing lady.
That was.
So she's will be obviously she's the first non-London chair of Beaver.
Yeah.
I first became aware of Beaver because they set up the standards of care, and I was a service user at the Sussex Beacon at the time. The British HIV Association advises doctors on what is the best model
exactly.
of care.
Yes.
So they did some in the mid 20 teens.
Yeah.
And then they updated them in 2018, I think. standards of care, but they're well worth a look. So they are the gold standard of what you should, if you are suddenly diagnosed with HIV, I want to know what kind of care you should be receiving, then they're looking at the standards of care from Beaver as the care that you should be receiving. It doesn't always happen that way, but if not, then contact Beaver and they'll get in touch with the doctors in that area to say, look, you should be doing this.
I was on the Beaver. I spoke about last year, wasn't it?
Two years ago. Yeah, it was the year before,
Newcastle,
wasn't it?
Yeah, yes. About the injectables.
In Newcastle,
injectable.
Yes. Yeah, I remember that one.
that's a very interesting experience. I was talking about that injectable.
Yeah. Injectable. How big was the audience for the?
It was, well, you were there, weren't you, Sue?
Yeah, it was
big. I mean, you know, I took a big gulp before I got on there, but I was talking to Lena, who's at the Lawson unit, and we got on really well, so it kind of connects. Yeah. And then there was a panel of five of us where we talked, and I just tried to talk. I mean, sometimes I struggle with my words sometimes, but I just get, what do you mean, yes.
And I believe you also mentioned the HIVO, didn't you, when you were there? Do you remember?
Yeah, of course. Just get the message out.
We didn't know that we existed.
No,
there you go.
That's what we always try to do, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're currently outreaching at the moment, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
More people about us. And, yeah.
So can people go down to the Beaver?
So you can. So if you are not a Beaver member, you can go to the conference for £85.
It's a community membership.
I mean, have a look at their website. Obviously, if you can't go in person, then they'll be reporting on what they're discussing on their website. So their website is beaver.org, and the Beaver is spelled B-H-I-V-A.
Right.
I'll be attending.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, I'll be attending, so I'll be able to do some reporting for the show. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And we've got, actually, the week before, we've got Joe Josh, who's...
Yes.
You know Joe Josh, don't you?
No, I've not met her. Communications.
Yeah, that's right, yes. Yeah. I mean, she does a lot of work in the HIV sector. She's also, you know, and living with HIV herself. Yeah. And, she's also one of our Positive Voices speakers, and she does the mountains of work. Yeah. So...
She'll be on the show next show.
The conference is 23rd to the 25th of April. Check out beaver.org if you want to know more information. And we're running out of time a little bit, so just Lunch Positively is on Friday.
Yes, tomorrow.
Which happens to be the anniversary of Kenny Everett's death.
Yeah.
For listeners that don't know, it was a pioneering DJ, very funny man.
Can I have a video show?
Publicly died and met the EAD.
Yes, mm-hmm. So I remember it well.
Lunch Positive is open from the doors open at 12. They serve food at 1 o'clock. Please go along and tell Gary how much you enjoyed the show.
Yes.
And that's at the Dorset Methodist Church, isn't it?
It's every Friday. They also do a Tuesday thing. But check out lunchpositive.org's website. So positive, you'll find it.
Yeah.
That'd be great. Thank you ever so much, listeners, for joining us. And thank you, Sue and Josh, for helping me out.
Absolute pleasure. Love it.
It's your choice, David.
Yeah, yay. It's my choice.
Ooh, what is it?
Well, as we're running out of time, the time is now.
That's interesting.
Maloko.
Bye. Goodbye. Bye-bye. Bye.